Football on Off the Ball.
Well, I think man management is far more nuanced nowadays, as you're suggesting, because the dressing rooms have changed. You've got players from different faiths, different cultures, different communities, and you've got to reflect all that. These are player whisperers as well as player shouters.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
We have finally made it to Belfast. Thank you so much for coming out, giving up for Ireland legend Brian O'Driscoll, everyone. I've got to try that again. Give it up for Leinster legend Brian O'Driscoll, everyone.
Oh.
See, Brian's come up here absolutely dying to come to Belfast. And listen, it is one of the great cities. But there was an extra pep in his step coming up here today. It was almost as if you've never had a bad experience on the rugby pitch up here.
We've had some good days. It's been a mixed bag, in truth. But for the crunch games, I think you'll find Blue tended to get it done. Some good battles over the years. And listen, it's a tough place to go and play, Ravenhill. It really is, or at least it used to be. It's getting back to those ways now. You needed a good Leinster man to get into the coaching staff to put you right, and he will steer you in the necessary direction along with our academy dropouts that are either way up north as well. So you are welcome.
Listen, I am here for a panto villain version of Brian O'Driscoll tonight. Obviously, so many highlights of you playing against Ulster. One of the clips that we managed to find pretty easily on YouTube is this famous, amazing moment from you where you passed to your favourite teammate on the pitch.
Well, Green, feeling the heat by O'Driscoll. Oh, brilliant by O'Driscoll! He's probably the best centre in the world.
Not bad. So,
we weren't meant to get the ball, right? Yeah. And so it was literally in the spur of the moment, and we knew that Ulster like pincering in. So I said to Dennis Hickey, I said, listen, if we get the ball, you run a short line and I'll throw it over your head and I'll catch it around the other side of you. And we kind of had a chuckle, not thinking anything of it. Next thing, scrum gets screwed and it comes our way. I said, well, we have to go ahead with it. And sure enough, as night is day, Tommy Bowe comes pincering in on Dennis Hickey. And I was like, right, I threw the ball over his head and run around and catch it. And I was away. And actually, I should have probably done better, but I was laughing so hard running up the touchline that it had actually worked, that nothing came of it. But it became a decent highlight reel.
We will be brief about this. Are we allowed to mention the 2012 Heineken
yes,
final?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
I mean, we have a gallery of images here. Do you want to briefly break this? You can pander to us all again here, Brian. You can patronize us, or you can say it was one of the greatest days of your life.
So was that the first one or the second one or the third one? Listen, it was a great day, and we were in a different place because we had managed to win a couple and ground out and found a way to win. And it was Ulster's first one for a while since 99. So we played well that day. There's nothing really about it other than we kind of were ready for them. And we had genuinely thought Clermont in France, we'd beaten them in the semi-final. And we kind of felt to ourselves, if we can get one better on them, we should have enough for Ulster on a big day.
And there was one last piece of pain 12 months later in the Rabo Direct Pro 12 final. I think we've got a load of images here. Here's Andrew Trimble and somebody else trying to put you to ground. Not quite sure who that other person was.
Swear to God, this was the most nervous I have ever been for a rugby match, which you kind of go, really? You're well used to playing against Ulster and a lot of Irish teammates, but we had lost the three Pro 12 finals in the build-up to that, so this was the fourth, and it was inconceivable to win or to lose four in a row. And in the end, I really needn't have been that worried about it because we managed to get it done. I think that was the one that should have been played in Ravenhill that was being redeveloped, but the closest ground that could carry 18,000 plus people was the RDS, and that just happened to coincidentally be our home venue. So it was a bit unlucky because they did finish a higher seed than us, but As yeah. fortune had it, we had it back in Dublin.
I think you went absolutely crazy in the celebrations as well. Some wild Brian O'Driscoll photos doing the rounds afterwards. Listen, it's going to be an absolutely fantastic night. Thank you so much for being here with us in this unbelievable venue. Ulster Hall is absolutely beautiful. It's the first time we've done a show here. Some good news, by the way. We're hearing reports this evening. We'll try and firm them up over the next couple of hours that Cormac Isichuku and Robert Balakoon are set to start for Ireland this weekend. So we'll have loads and loads of Six Nations preview for the rest of the competition in the second half of this show, but we're going to get a load of brilliant stories over the next hour or so, I'd imagine, in the company of some of our guests. So give a big Ulster Hall welcome to Andrew Trimble. To Stephen Ferris. And to Alan Quinlan.
Where are we going over here?
Just a few boos, Quinny, not too bad.
I always got a good welcome when I came to Belfast. Always, but these guys are the main attraction here. I'm just trying to think of all the stories. A few will come to my head now in a few minutes about the two of them. Fez actually can go back to, what's the name of the stadium now?
Afadea.
He was kind of, wasn't welcome there for a few years, was he? All the criticism he was doing of the Ulster team. Trimby wasn't talking to him for 2 years. I only discovered that there a few minutes ago. So,
but we can get into that.
We will.
As the night goes on.
These are off-air conversations, Quinny. I did wonder, are you guys close friends? Were you just teammates? And then did you park it to solely an acquaintanceship? Or what's the friendship like between you guys at the moment?
Me and Stevie?
Yeah.
Yeah, we actually, we roomed together for the U7 World Cup. We came through, played under-21s together, so spent a lot of time in the early days. And then what Quinny's referencing there is whenever Stevie finished, then he became a pundit and a hard-hitting, straight-talking pundit at that. And we got a hiding in the RDS, and I was the
again.
Captain. Yeah, we got a hiding again. And I was Ulster's captain that night, and then after the game, the interviewer came up and
I get done dirty, though.
And he said,
I get done really dirty.
The interviewer says, Stevie Ferris says, and he almost, it was an English guy, put on a Belfast...
Graham from Graham Simmons.
He put on a thick Belfast accent to do the impression of what Stevie said. He said, there's no pride, no passion, they just don't want it enough. I thought, is that Stevie or just some lad at the pub? Is this like, is this the scholar of the game, Ferris? So yeah, we cooled a little bit. We weren't in touch for a while after that.
Yeah, you just took it personally and and badly. But yeah, no, Trimby and I obviously come up through the ranks. Together. Probably didn't spend that much time together, really, through under-21s, because he was shit crack, mostly. But yeah, it was a sort of backs-forwards thing, as you do. But like, we had some great trips, didn't we? Went to Argentina, Mendoza, under-21 Rugby World Cup. Went to World Cups together, so, and now frequent the golf course on the odd occasion, so.
Yeah, Mendoza was Stevie's kind of coming of age, under-21s. He was just physically, which is incredible. And we were all starting to appreciate what he was doing behind the scenes. And then he did it on the kind of, what at the time was a big stage, under-21s World Cup. But he was also developing this kind of, yeah, the straight-talking persona. And we arrived in Brad, the S&C coach who was with Leinster for a while. He wanted to.
This is false, by the way.
He wanted just to. Breathe. We arrived in. We'd had a night out the night before, and Ferris was kind of leery enough. And then the next morning, everybody was late for the weigh-in, but no one was as late as Stevie. And we all had to wait in the weigh-in area for Stevie to come in, weigh in. As he came into the room, Brad says, you're late. And Stevie goes, and this is amazing that he got away with this. Stevie said, I'm not late, you're late. And somehow that argument worked.
It's you had a lot of admiration for Andrew when you were both coming up through the underage ranks, whether it was schools rugby or whatever. Like you refer to him in your book as the Terminator when you guys are both playing underage rugby. So obviously from afar, you were a big admirer of Andrew Trimble.
Yeah, like Trimby can't remember this, and he said that he didn't play, but I went to Friends School in Lisburn. Yes, a very well-educated man, I know. And we were playing... Oh, we've got one. I think it's time you left. Get out of here. We were playing, we both got bowled out of the Schools Cup in the first round. So, of course, then you had to go into the Shield. And we went up to Coleraine Inns, we were away. And we actually scored the first try. We were leading 5-0. And then Trimby just put on the turbo jets and ran in three or four tries. But something that really pissed me off about him was he was 30 or 40 nil up or 5 up. And he ran underneath the sticks. And I came round to like just get him to dot the ball down. And he went poof, like that and smacked me straight in the chest. And then put the ball down as if to go... Fuck you.
But this.
But he says it's somebody else. It definitely wasn't him. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't remember. I probably remember doing that occasionally, but I assume this was before you started taking performance enhancing drugs. my mom and dad are in tonight, so just wanted to say hi to them. They're obviously not here to see me either, here to see Draco. Yeah. They're definitely not here to see these two. But just hi to mum and dad.
Brian, whenever you talk about your introductions to senior test rugby, an Ulster man often pops up in your stories, and that is Paddy Johns, the man who rolled out the red carpet for you in the Ireland team.
It was my first understanding of, obviously, I was in school in Dublin, and we used to come up and play Campbell College, and that would have been before 98, before the Good Friday Agreement, so it was always kind of a bit nervous. It was a big deal going up north and the uncertainty around what was going to happen at checkpoints and all of that stuff. So then I go into national camp for the first time in 99, and I'm, you know, we're going to the World Cup, and I get drug tested with Paddy Johns, and we're filling out our forms and asked nationality, and Paddy Johns, I'm Northern Irish. And I was like, I thought we were playing for Ireland in the World Cup. And so it was, what was recommended on tour was ratting on people that said things that maybe I thought they shouldn't have. So I said to Eric Elwood, Paddy Johns said he's Northern Irish, he's not Irish. And he was like, yeah, but he is. But up on the top of the bus, he went, well, Paddy, I heard you filled out your form. He said, if you're Northern Irish, should I have to put down that I'm Western Irish on any documentation going forward? So anyway, we went to the World Cup, wasn't particularly successful. And I remember the first game I played against Paddy, Leinster Ulster in Donnybrook. And I was in a ruck, and he jumped all over my back. It was in the days of proper rucking, and it hurt a lot. And I remember at one point in the game, I just remember thinking, I looked up and saw it was him. He kind of was smiling at me as he was doing it. I said, right, I'm gonna remember that. Anyway, in the second half, I was out in the center, and the next thing I saw him kind of stuck in a ruck with his arms kind of down by his side. And I thought to myself, this is the perfect opportunity to get my own back. So I went sprinting in from the center, and I decapitated him. I literally took his head off in a collision. And I was like, I'm lying on top of him. I was like, I think he's dead. I looked down to make sure he was okay, thinking about taking a pulse. And the next thing he looks up and he goes, great shot, Draco. I was like, fucking hell, that was as good as I can hit. And he's literally laughed at me. But like, the thing about Paddy was, he was a nasty piece of work on the field and a nicer guy you could not have met off it. Like, talk about Jekyll and Hyde. He was just, it was a switch that flicked when he was out on the park, and then this really quiet, placid, friendly, wouldn't say boo to a goose, just really, really nice guy. So yeah, that was the kind of first couple of introductions to him, and I was lucky to be captained by him. And then, you know, there were some other great players in that era too, with Humps and Dinger Bell and all of that crew as well, who had the success of the European Cup in 99.
You would think that Leinster-Ulster is a bigger rivalry because of geographical proximity than Ulster versus Munster, but whatever way it was with your teams in the 2000s, the more ferocious stories tend to come from Ulster versus Munster. Quinny, do you want to talk a little bit about this? There are a couple of flashpoints involving some individuals from Ulster, and of course from your own province as well, where things got pretty heated down through those.
Yeah, I think, as Draco says, back in the mid to late 90s, I made my debut from Munster in 96. It's a long time ago, well before the boys, and I think I played my first game up in the old Raven Hill in, in 97, and it was kind of different back then. The reception we got, I suppose, you know, once you get onto an Irish squad and you start getting to know guys, and what Brian is saying about Paddy Johns is so true. I remember in 98, I was kind of in an Irish squad very early, and I had to room with Paddy Johns, and I was very, very nervous because I kind of had seen that persona, and he was the nicest fella you could ever meet. He'd go and meet your parents and be so polite, and you'd play against him the next week and he'd be saying, this is not the same guy. But it was tough. It was tough back then. It was difficult for us. And we won a few times in around that time, 97, 98, 99 with Munster. And it was an incredible kind of rivalry there and an incredible intensity. I remember you're on a different side of the border, if you like, and that came into it a little bit. There was a bit of tension about that, and I remember being in a game and Andy Ward said to me, there was a bit of a scuffle, and he said, hey Quinlan, be careful, you're on the wrong side of the border now. And I was there. you of all people saying that to me, you're from fucking New Zealand. and you're bringing religion into it and stuff. And no, I never had any kind of, it was definitely tough. There was a fair rivalry there. The interpros back then, and lads will probably agree, it's not that they've kind of relaxed off any bit, but I think it's more Team Ireland and the players get on really well. And back then it was serious rivalries. You know, I remember when Fez came on the scene first, you probably played against each other down in Cork, was it 2006-07? Yeah. I have a little bit to add to my story from the last roadshow in Dublin when I was captain of Munster in Belfast in 06. I met Rory Best over in Paris and he said, people didn't hear it, I captained Munster once, Alan Roland came out, was called out for the coin toss, and he said, you must be fucking joking me, because he couldn't believe I was captain. And I told that story in Dublin a few weeks ago, and then Bestie said to me in France, he said, you never finished it off by saying you got a crossfield kick for Brian Kearney to win the match, which I did. It was we were 20-0
down.
We were 20-0 down at halftime. We won 21-20 or something like that. But we had some great days, but that was one that kind of stood out. So Bestie will be happy I mentioned the crossfield kick. But Fez was like this destructive kind of powerhouse when he came on the scene first. And I remember in that match, you were just mad to kill me, weren't you? and I could, like, every time I got the ball, he was just this explosiveness and enthusiasm. And if he got you on the money, you were in trouble. And I remember one time I just sidestepped and I kind of laughed at him and I said, you missed me there. And Bestie was walking past and he said, you're fucking fair lucky. So I was very, very wary of him. We became great pals then in the Irish squad. I was a good bit older than Fez, but we became great pals. And I know I'm drifting off the rivalry here, but we went in 07 in the World Cup. Does anyone remember 07, that disaster in France in 2007? Trimby was involved and Draco, myself and Fez weren't. There was only four players out of 30 that didn't get any game time, and we were known as the Bordeaux Four. Brian Young, Brian Kearney, Fez and myself, and We became great pals then and started to, you know, get to know each other a lot. And
you mean you constantly bitched for 4 weeks?
We both kind of decided at that point after the first two games that we probably weren't going to get game time. It was funny because we won against Namibia. Dennis Leamy holds up a Georgian player to save us losing again. The second game, Dricko's cringing here now. Mm. And the third game in France, Trimby made a ball to that because he was he went infield off a scrum.
Oh, what a fucking terrible piece of defence that was. and I forgot about that.
Vincent Clerc ran in and scored a try in the corner. Yeah. That was a disaster then. We went down to Bordeaux the next day, went and had a few drinks the next day, had a bit of a blowout. And then
I'm glad you brought that up because I've actually I've waited 19 years to talk about that.
About Vincent Clerc. Somebody gave you a rating of 3 out of 10, wasn't it? Isn't it? One of the journalists.
Yeah, it didn't go well. So we had this plan where I would go in and defend at 10 beside Rog, and then it was like 30 meters out on the left-hand side of our 20, just outside our 22, and Simon Easterby was supposed to, one of our coaches was supposed to drop back and cover that kick, and I tapped him on the arse and I said, Simon, this is what we talked about. I'm going in here to defend at 10. I'm going to go straight up onto Michalak. And you know, it looks like this. And in the 15 seconds between him going like that and the ball getting to Nine's hands, he completely forgot. Completely forgot what he was supposed to be doing. So I could see it happening. I was like, I'm not going to drop out here. So then, easiest try you ever see. Michalak puts it in there. Vincent Clerc runs around. One bite straight into his bread basket and he scores. And I looked at him and he just looked away, and we've never talked about it. Never ever talked about it since.
We met Vincent Clerc over in Paris last week, and Trimby was all, how are you? And he said, oh geez, I remember that try I scored in Paris. And Trimby was like, oh Jesus, you had to bring that up. Nobody talks about that. And we started chatting about it then.
So, and I was like, we were just talking about this last night, because last week in Paris, we went out for pizzas, and Quinny and I haven't spent that much time together recently, but over the last number of years, but recently we started to get to know each other. And that means, you know, he's been all very polite about the politics of being up in Belfast, but he called me a Jaffa bastard for the entire meal. And we had
are you born again Christian, are you, or are you a devout Christian or something?
Formally we had our director, our sound guy, air, and then everybody was like, they all just said, okay, oh, that banter's okay then. And then we got to the stadium the following night. Dave McIntyre, Quinny, and me, the co-commentator, co-coms. We arrived and there's three units, and the three units have like commentator, co-coms one, co-coms two. But co-coms two, the unit had, like, so he's got a wee piece of tape on it with marking on it. And it said, Virgin Prod.
They both looked at me straight away and said, did I write something on this?
Oh, that is a bit on the money, is it not? That's quite, you know, sexually inexperienced Protestant. So anyway, it turned out, we came back a little bit later and it was a Virgin Media producer.
Yeah, so it wasn't yet. That is true.
But Vincent Clerc, whenever I was walking past Vincent Clerc, and I said, we were just talking about you last night, and he said, oh yeah,
we were just laughing about him. Jeez, try again.
And he said, yes, actually, and he referenced the corner where the try was scored, because we were standing in that corner. It was weird, and he said, it was very good for my career. I said, well, that's a sliding doors moment, because it was very bad for my career.
Is it okay to call you a Jaffa here on stage? No,
fine.
Nobody will get offended or
just don't call
like
me a
that.
Virgin.
You know, Mark Robson, the commentator from up here as well, a great friend of mine, he's known as Rugby Jaffa on his Twitter handle, so I always call him the Jaffa. So you're the new Jaffa, Trimby.
That means so much. That's so sweet.
I was working with Robbo there a few weeks back, and Ulster had a really good game. Some of you might have listened to it. And Robbo is just so far out there. And of course he says, oh, here comes the Belfast bomb squad off the bench. I was like, here we go. I just put my head in my hands, but that's Robbo for you. But Quinny, if anything, the 2007 Rugby World Cup was a good thing for us, because we came home fucking heroes because we didn't play in it. Where all them boys came home were absolutely slated. But the best thing about that World Cup, genuinely, was sitting in the team room. The team room was like, you know, Rocky, you know, where they run around the square room and hit the punch bag on the way around. That's what the red carpet and the food was terrible. But Dricko playing table tennis against Gary O'Driscoll, the team doctor, was like the highlight of the whole World Cup. This man is a ridiculous table tennis player, unbelievable. And I actually lost about 10 kgs in that trip as well, because all I ate was Nutella and toast and drank tins of Coke. the whole time because the flight at the hotel was shocking. But
and Brian Kearney and me were watching Lonesome Dove with Rala in the team room for, I don't know, does anyone remember Lonesome Dove, Robert Duvall, great Western series? That's all we watched. And we trained well, though, in fairness, fitness-wise.
Yeah, well, but
before the game in against Argentina, there was a lot of pressure on Eddie O'Sullivan, obviously, and there was a lot of negativity back home, a lot of stories that we were all fighting with each other. Everybody was wanted to leave. And, like, to be fair, the only issue we had was the hotel in Bordeaux. We were in an industrial estate outside the city centre. We were originally supposed to be in a hotel right in the centre, a lovely place, but they were doing renovations or something and we were out.
Delayed, yeah.
That's what we were told anyway. And so we were kind of just a little bit isolated out there. But so it was tricky. The matches weren't great. Team Eddie had kind of decided to stick with the... He left 15 guys at home from the tour to Argentina that summer and literally told 30 of us going to Argentina. We played two tests and he said, look, there's 15 places up for grabs here. In other words, the other 15 are gone, and they were. We knew that. We probably went with a lot of hope. It was a very good squad, but just underperformed for various different reasons. But at the end of it, the Argentina game, I remember... Both Fez and I did the exact same thing separately. We both went to Eddie O'Sullivan and said, I said to him, give me a shot against Argentina. Give myself, Fez and Neil Best a shot. Now, you'd want to be off your fucking head and drugs to play the three of us together. Three lunatics. But I tried to convince him that, you know, put us out against Argentina. We'll cause carnage. We'll, you know, Fez with the enthusiasm, the explosiveness, Bestie and myself with the mad heads, and I said we'll do a job for you on Sunday. And he thought it was very admirable of me chancing my arm with that kind of summation, but he shot me down. But Fez, you went to him as well and said,
yeah. Yeah,
you didn't actually bring me and Bestie into it. You were a selfish bollocks. You just wanted yourself to be selected.
I actually said, don't be picking Quinny. Like, he's a fucking penalty machine. Don't be getting him. But yeah, I went to Eddie, and it was after a training session. I was lashing down my rain, and it was, I think it was maybe after the first game. Obviously, didn't play particularly great. And it was a real physical session. And it was like almost like schoolboy stuff. You know, have three men... You know, run through, place the ball. And I went, right, I'm going to go balls to the wall here, see how I get on. And I walked off. I was like, right, I can't do any more. And knocked on Eddie's door a couple of days later. And I says, what's the crack? And in fairness to I really liked Eddie. Like, he never picked me, like, rarely picked me. But I liked him as a coach because he was always honest with me. And he said, look, Stevie, pick this side. I've went with all my main guys, all the leaders, and they didn't deliver last week. But I'm going to go with him again. And I said, right. So it's all right. It's up to you. So he said, unless there's an injury, you're not going to get playing. And I was like, well, I appreciate you being honest with me, but I think you're wrong. And I think on reflection, he might have given us a couple of us a chance on that.
Maybe on the bench or something, but we lost.
But like we come home like, and we were like, I got given a 2007 Rugby World Cup cap and like literally... Could easily have thrown it in the bin because it didn't feel part of it.
Before you go off, I know we want to talk other rugby, but France was crazy. I just wanted to tell this one because of a bit of unrest, and you was Captain Dricko, you know, there was all this stuff coming back from home, and Rog was gambling, and Jordan Murphy wanted to go home, and there was something else going wrong. And it was all false. We actually got on really well together over there. We just couldn't click as a team to get the performances. And the week of the Argentina game, I knew I wasn't playing, and I went out and met some mates in the Friday night or the Saturday night. I can't remember. Somebody said to me the Late Late Show was on a Saturday night back then. I don't know, but it was either Pat Kenny Show or the Late Late Show on RT down south. And Trevor Brennan rang me on the Friday. He said, what's the story over there? You know, you're all fighting and what's going on? And is it true about all the stories? And I said, Trevor, to be honest, I said... It's not. It's all rubbish. It's we actually gone well. The hotel in Bordeaux wasn't great. The food wasn't great. Stuff like that. But everybody kind of knuckled down. In fact, we probably overtrained a bit. And so anyway, I went out, met a few mates that night, and came back to the hotel. And Niall O'Donovan was waiting in reception for me, and he was kind of freaking out. I'd missed calls on the phone. I didn't realize it. And he said, what's going on? He said, Eddie's going mad. He said, Trevor Brennan's been on the Late Late Show, and he's talking about, you said to him that you spoke to him and he quoted your name. He said, you know, what's happening in France? Trevor was asked. And he said, oh, I was talking to Alan Quinlan today, and he said, it's an absolute disaster over there. And he said, I'd be gone home a few weeks ago. I would have left myself, only nobody would have missed me if I left. And Trevor said this live on live TV, like, and everyone was like, it just added to more pressure on Eddie and the coaches and everything. And so I was like denying it. And it was so crazy that he believed me. Like, he believed that, yeah, I partly guessed that Trevor was talking rubbish and he had to go up and calm Eddie. And we lost then on the Sunday, and that was the end of the World Cup.
So, Stephen, did you by default then much prefer Declan Kidney as a head coach, or was this just all part of the process of becoming a starter for Ireland?
I think, like, as the guys can relate to, is you're really, most coaches you really like if they pick you. And like, there's a lot of players that I play with at Ulster that didn't like certain coaches, and the reason they didn't like them was because they weren't getting picked. But I did like Eddie. I did like him. I liked the way he's straight down the middle. He talked to everybody, you know, very similarly. He liked the young guys coming in. Yes, he didn't give me a shot, but he gave me my first cap, you know, so he gave me that. But yeah, Decky was completely different. Like, Decky wouldn't have been standing up at the front, you know, taking tactical team meetings, where Eddie would do it no problem. And he would call people out in front of each other, and I sort of liked that attitude. Obviously worked with him for a few years at RTE, and he was exactly the same person, you know, so just a genuine guy. So
yeah, Andrew, what was your view, and maybe Brian as well, your view on the buy-on or the Bordeaux four? Was there a sense that, oh God, these guys have been isolated, these guys have been shut out? Did you know that there was a quartet that had no involvement, or what was your view of it?
Honestly, I wasn't even really aware of it.
Well, that's a lie, because you're rooming with me. Oh, the good old Christian's lying again here, boys.
He's the real selfish one.
Yeah, he's a selfish.
You weren't aware they were part of our squad.
You thought we were just...
I just couldn't...
We were carrying the bags or something, was it?
I just couldn't fathom the idea that we had to actually select these lads. Just didn't make any sense to me. I was in Team Eddie at that stage. But you're right, Stevie, like, whatever experience that you have, whatever good experience you have with a coach, that's the coach that you kind of have fond memories of. All three coaches that I played under all dropped me reasonably regularly, so I don't really like any of them, if I'm honest.
Like, even if we do go to Bayonne for a moment before we move off the 07 World Cup, like, that seemed like an okay night for you. Like, you score a try that night against that Bayonne team. Obviously, it's a tough night for you, Brian. You do manage to make it back after getting clocked by one of your opponents.
You lose that fight, did you, that night?
It was a sucker punch. He blindsided me. I remember saying it was Wayne Barnes's, one of his first games. Certainly, I know it wasn't an international fixture, but for an international team against Bayonne, like, who thought that was a good idea? We had France in our pool in France, go down to Bayonne, one of the most physical, aggressive, uncompromising teams, a matter of weeks before the World Cup, and they'll go nice and handy on you. And I remember it was getting filthy out there, and the game was turning at that point. TMOs were kind of introduced, and just they're trying to clean the game up a bit. And I remember going to Wayne Barnes, listen, this is getting really bad. If you don't sort it out, I'm going to take my team off the pitch. And I was like, that'll teach him now. And about 2 minutes later, I was the one leaving the pitch on a stretcher. Yeah. With a broken sinus. And I remember going to Wayne in the immediate aftermath. We kind of got over, but I was like, that was some baptism of fire for you. And it's funny, you'd rarely be in a situation where you'd threaten a referee like that, but it was getting so out of hand that genuinely I thought something nasty is going to happen, and I was on the receiving end of it. But it kind of just set the tone for the World Cup. We'd gotten so much of our practice wrong. We didn't touch a ball in pre-season for the first 5 or 6 weeks. By the time it came to playing games, it was like rugby was a new sport to us. You know, the ball handling and passing was non-existent. It was almost embarrassing that we'd gotten it so wrong. So that's why we ended up playing the same team, because we had to try and build a bit of confidence as units. And ordinarily in your group stage, you might play your best team for 2 or 3 of the games and then bring the hackers in after that for a game. But
the hackers.
But we couldn't afford to do that.
Do you remember the fellow who punched you?
I just remember he was a Kiwi guy.
Yeah, he was a Kiwi, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what? I genuinely, I'm not saying that, I don't know if I ever said this, it was one of my biggest regrets that I didn't.
He you
was,
there?
He, yeah, he came vicinity. On the field. He was in arm's length to me, and John Hayes grabbed me.
Yeah, maybe that's why Eddie
and,
didn't.
And Hayes said to me, do you know what Hayes said to me? He says, you're in enough of fucking trouble now without getting yourself in any more grief. Because, honestly, if I punched him, I probably would have got a red card, and that's World Cup over. And I didn't think about that. But Hayes just stopped me. Do you know that split second where you can react? But it was a nasty one.
It was, World Cup over as opposed to playing not a minute in the World Cup.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, well,
you're welcome.
I suppose. We got the appearance fee, did we? The participation fee.
I remember chatting to O'Connell after that night. That experience was mad to me. And I remember that more vividly than I remember large parts of the World Cup, because it was so unique. But when you got knocked out, I remember O'Connell said to me afterwards that he thought you took a dive.
God, he wanted that captaincy.
Until he saw the replay, whatever clip we had of it. And he remember he felt so bad, because he genuinely thought Draco was just hamming this up to get that lad in trouble. And then that game, I remember being like a bit rattled after the game, because they were so aggressive, so physical, and so filthy. Mm. And the only person who that fixture was perfect for
Neil
was
Best.
Neil Best.
Yeah.
Exactly. At one stage, he was like, hold my beer, this is... I know exactly how to engage with this type of environment.
That's what you get from the Craigie Red Sox.
To the point where he, at one stage, I was there was a breakdown in play, and we were waiting for the scrum to get set up again. And I just heard Bestie shouting at one of their South Africans. And he'd obviously just like, I maybe thought this off the top of his head, this trash talk. He started slagging this lad for getting kicked out of Stellenbosch University for failing exams. I thought, that's either unbelievably well researched or you're just a very creative trash talker.
It was Maite Wada was the guy who gave you the hit. Stephen, if we will get to 2011 and that World Cup very shortly, but the intervening years are quite interesting. I think probably for you, a big breakthrough is the tour in 2008. I think, Quinny, you might be injured for parts of 2008 or not selected. Were you guys up against one another for one jersey? Did it feel like that in those couple of months leading into the 2009 Grand Slam year?
When we went out to Australia, were you all like selected on that tour?
I got selected on the tour to Australia in 2008, but we played the Heineken Cup final, and I got, my eye was kind of scratching the eye, and it didn't come on, the pain of it and the stress of it for a day or two, but I got over that and went on the plane, and I had this throbbing pain in my quad all the way out to New Zealand. Landed there, got a scan, and I'd ruptured a muscle in my quad. So my tour was over. I flew to Wellington, and we played New Zealand and Wellington, wasn't it? And then went to Australia and played another one. Do you remember Roy Keane was on the plane with us going out to New Zealand?
That's what I'm saying there. I was sat at Sprucefield Shopping Centre waiting to get on a bus to go to the Churchill Stag in USA, the Churchill Cup, which is...
Oh, you got called up for me, did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I got called up for you. So I was literally sitting waiting in my mum's car, ready to jump on the bus, and team manager said, don't get on the bus, you have to come out to Australia. So I then flew the next day, got out to Australia, you were obviously out. Wally then pulled his calf in that week, and Shane Jennings was starting, and I come onto the bench. And like, when I got to Australia, I was rooming with Malcolm O'Kelly, who seemed to be out on the piss for about 3 or 4 days by the time I got there. All I could see when I walked into the room was like these legs hanging out the bottom of the bed with white socks on them. And I knew it was Mal straight away. And I remember going down into the Crown Casino and Bernard Jackman was sitting playing in the corner with the sunglasses on as if he was like a high roller. And I was like, oh, this is class. Like, you know, just going to enjoy my time, get a bit of training done, you know, speak to a lot of the lads. Shane Jennings bust his ribs 20 minutes in and I ended up playing 60 minutes of the match. And I was supposed to be playing in the Churchill Cup a week earlier. So like it just shows you how certain things pan out. And I actually played really, really well. And Dricker, you'll probably remember it. We should have won that game. Mm. A couple of passes, it just didn't go to hand. I think they had a breakaway try as well. It was in the Telstra Dome back then. And I played brilliantly. And that was sort of sort of my my leap up the ladder, and thankfully Quinny never came back.
I'd like to ask then, how does 09 then sit in your consciousness? Because like the fact of the matter is that you did play really well. That was a moment where you do propel up the depth chart in that Ireland squad. 09 on, you know, the face of it is Grand Slam. You get selected for the Lions. But it's way more complicated than that. It's coming off early in the final game against Wales, and it's obviously flying home from the Lions tour early. So where does 09 sit in your consciousness?
Yeah, like I played obviously brilliantly in that game against Australia, but I would have played brilliantly in the other games if they had selected me as well. They never selected me, so I never got a chance. I'm joking. But no, it was a bit of a whirlwind couple of years, of course it was. 2009 was brilliant, but yeah, 7 minutes into the game against Wales, they always say if a bouncing ball or a ball spits out of a ruck, the first thing you do is dive on it. That's the last thing you do. The first thing you do is kick it as hard as you can. So I went to dive on it, and Martin Williams kicked it, and he kicked my finger in the process, and the bone shot out sideways. So I remember running around for a few minutes, and Paulie was like shouting at Wayne Barnes, going, his bone's sticking out of his hand. You need to shut the game down. Stop the game. And I went off, and I was like, right, I'll get it sewed up, you know, get it wrapped up and go back on. But because it had been exposed to the air for, what, 7 or 8 minutes, whatever it was, Mike Webb, the doctor, says, look, you're at serious risk here of losing your finger if you go back on. I was like, oh, that, you know, at that stage, I don't care, I'm going. He says, no, I'm making this decision. But it was a bit of a masterstroke by Declan Kidney, because he actually selected Dennis Leamy ahead of Jamie Heaslip the week before against Scotland, which didn't sit well with Jamie, obviously, because he was playing really, really well. But it was just important getting into that last game that one of the other back rows had a significant amount of game time. And lo and behold, Dennis came on and played 70 minutes of the match, and we were able to get the result. So, yeah, after that, it was just about knuckling down, and obviously got myself into the Lions squad, which was an unbelievable experience.
How do you feel watching on when the lads are out there for whatever, 73 minutes without you winning the Grand Slam?
It was hell. It was absolutely hell. Sitting on a bench and you're up and down, the emotions, like it was, you know, I can just see it. Rog off the end of the foot, one bounce, Tommy takes it underneath the sticks, the drama at the end, Paddy Wallace, wanker, giving away the penalty at the end. Falling short. As soon as it fell short, we were already 30 yards onto the pitch, crying like young kids, because just a sense of relief that everything had happened.
Is there not a part of you that's a little bit gutted about your own role in this and it being taken from you a little bit?
Not really. Like, I started all 5 games. Like, that's the way I sort of look at it.
Oh, and he played brilliantly. Did you not hear
it? What a 7 minutes.
If there was a 6th and 7th game, he'd have been amazing.
take us on to the summer then, because it kind of feels like those 3 tests would have been absolutely perfect for a player like you. I think the second test against South Africa is one of the most brutal games of rugby ever played in the modern era. Kind of same thing again. How do you feel sitting at home this time watching all-out war take place in South Africa?
Well, stupidly, I stayed in South Africa for the first test. I wish I had just jumped on a plane and went home, definitely, just to get out of there, because I was sort of hanging around like a bad smell. And the reason why I did hang around was because I remember getting in with the doc. It was Gary, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Gary. And I said, look, I think I can play here in a couple of weeks. I was like, my knee, I'm walking around, it's feeling okay. I think I can play. And he goes, I'm not sure. Like, it's grade 2 terrier, MCL, I'm not sure. And I was like, right, okay. But I hung around, I went to the first test, and it was just an amazing spectacle. Like, I was up in the gods and I loved every minute of it. But again, it was weird the way the whole thing happened. Quinny should have been on the tour. He wasn't there. He may be touching that.
No, don't fucking go near it. I don't want to talk about it.
Tom Croft gets called up into the squad.
Your best mate, of course. Yeah, I heard you were hanging around him the whole time over there, weren't you?
Tom Croft. Tom Croft is playing reasonably well. I'm playing reasonably well. Then I get injured, and Tom Croft then starts the first test, scores two tries off two line breaks from Dricko, two offloads. He gets over the line, scores two tries. I think he was close to being man of the match, and he was probably one of the best players of the series, and he was never selected to be on the tour. Do you know what I mean? So it's just the way the world works sometimes. But here, it's a contact sport. I injured myself in training, just a little tweak in my MCL. And yeah, I've no regrets.
At least you got out there. My gear made it to Johannesburg and was going around the carousel at the airport. And I was getting pictures from the boys. And they gave all my gear away to all these workers in the airport. Mm-hmm. And Rala gathered up some boots and stuff and brought me home some of the gear from that line store. Like, that's how cruel the bastards were to me, Ian. At least you got there. You put on the jersey and the whole lot. But yeah, my gear, that's the memory of the Lions tour in 09 for me, my gear going around the carousel.
Did you enjoy it, Trimby?
I may as well be sitting in the
Trimby
crowd.
Took a break in 09.
Yeah. The politics of the whole thing.
His coach didn't like you.
Yeah. Very few coaches liked me at that stage.
It does bring us nicely on to 2 years later, because we have to talk about the 2011 Rugby World Cup. Could I just ask, first of all, Brian, when you think about this team, is 2011 the real peak of this team?
Yeah, it was the best. Best chance, certainly, sorry, my involvement in World Cups. We were primed team, really good shape, very, you know, bit more depth, really, really good pack. And yeah, I look back on that. We did come across a good Welsh team in that quarterfinal. Don't get me wrong, they went on to do, you know, pretty good things themselves and winning slams and whatnot. And if you think back to that generation, considering where Wales are now, like, there were some really, really good, like, 7 or 8 excellent players. And so we just got beaten by a better team on the day. But I do look back on that one, on that tour, as comfortably the most enjoyable up to that quarterfinal. We had a really great team spirit. We had a great time when we spent it down in Queenstown. We were able to mix things well, even though we were very professional at that stage. We trained hard, but then we were able to let our hair down once or twice on tour. I think we just had really good fun with fines committee stuff. Lads were being kicked off the bus and having to make their own way home the whole time from training. It was a really good feel-good factor from that squad that kind of just came to a very abrupt end at the quarterfinal. As much as it was so deflating to lose that quarterfinal, it was also that sense of, well, it's done now. This great tour, this last 4 or 5 weeks of so much fun and kind of alignment and togetherness, that's dissipates and that goes and it'll never be the same again. So, yeah, I do look back and listen, I was in 4 World Cups and you only managed to get to 2 quarterfinals and didn't really fire a shot in either of them. But I look back with lots of great memories from that one because I think we got so much stuff right.
Well, let's talk about Australia at Eden Park. There is, of course, one moment we want to watch for the millionth time once again this evening, everybody. Have a look. This is Ferris against Wilgan.
James O'Connor standing right behind Craig Cooper. Ireland trying to get a shot again. Turns slightly, has it gone? 90. Can he have been told to use it? But he's swallowed up by Ferris, who picks him up like a rag doll and throws him over the 22. And Ireland get the scrum. Absolutely brilliant stuff from the Ulster flanker.
Stephen Ferris had been out of the game for so long. Best Irish forward against USA last week, and that is a massive confidence booster. Australia put so much purchase into the performance of Will Guinea at half back, but he's just hassled and harried, taken back. Ferris, Paul O'Connell, Donegal, Callaghan. That's exactly what Ireland need to do.
O'Connell off his feet.
Good cheering. Stephen, obviously, it's one of the iconic moments, not only from your career. But but also an iconic moment in the context of that World Cup. Like the internet and social media had sort of had its first Rugby World Cup, and this was almost like the first viral moment of a Rugby World Cup.
Yeah, it was mental. Like it was a good moment in my career and something that everybody always talks around, but I can just remember Donegh O'Callaghan when about four lads flew off their feet over the top of me. He just turned around and says, "Fucking give it to him, Fizz, fucking give it to him." I was lying on the ground, couldn't breathe because I had 15 lads on top of me at that moment in time. But yeah, I just reiterate what Brian said. The 2011 Rugby World Cup was a huge opportunity missed, but we had some brilliant times.
I did a commentary. Brilliant times. I did a commentary at that World Cup. I just retired and I remember I went out to New Zealand with ITV and Ireland were in New Plymouth. And I was so friendly with everyone and so accustomed to kind of being in the group that I arrived at the hotel and had lunch with you. And after about 2 or 3 hours, I was just hanging around. You came over to me and said, "Quinny, you're not in the squad." I said, "Fuck, I better head off." So you said it in a real nice way, like it was kind of like, you know, you're not actually in the squad. And but I did the commentary in that game. It was incredible. There was so many Irish there. It was really affordable back then, I think, for to go to a World Cup. There was camper vans everywhere. The game was phenomenal. It was just incredible down at the waterfront after the game. It was thousands of Irish. And as Drico said, like there was an enthusiasm and an energy that Irish team could do something special. I did a quarter-final commentary as well, and it just kind of unraveled because they had a great team, great players, loads of young guys through, loads of power, pace. It was a great mixture of you know, even look at Dunnick and Paul there. They were in their prime, weren't they, for work rate and, you know, the back row was so powerful, just great players. And it was an incredible, I meet so many people nowadays and I remember meeting you in New Zealand in Rotorua or somewhere and we were in a camper van. It was one of those tours that was really, you know, I wasn't playing, but it was a really special tour to be there and to see it. And obviously Fez's moment was one that does stand out, but beating Australia as well.
Yeah, just a quick story on that. Like, so we went to Queenstown, flew into Queenstown, spent a week there, went to Hamilton, beat USA. Then we, for some reason, went back to Queenstown. We were out for a few beers. And you had Shawnee O'Brien, you had Jamie Heaslip and a few other boys, and we're partying the night away. And all I can remember is Mumford and Sons on. And next thing, Jamie Heaslip puts his fist through the ceiling. Like, it was a really, really low ceiling. And the barman looks at me and he looks over at me. And I know not all homosexual people talk like this, but he says, "Big fella, you get your top off, I'll give you and your teammates free drink all night." Right? And before he said night, I had the top off, right? The abs were out, right? The biceps were bulging. Like, I looked fucking $1 million, like, right? But as soon as I threw the top off, I seen a couple of flickers, you know, a couple of lights going off. It's like, what the hell's going on here? Anyway, woke up the next day. All you were hearing about was the England team getting into trouble around Queenstown, Manny Tuilagi jumping off ferries, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, we go and we play against Australia. We win the game. We're sitting in the change room afterwards, and Paul McNaughton, God rest his soul, not with us anymore, pulls me to the side and he says, "Fez, you're fucking lucky, son." I says, "What's wrong?" And he pulls out his phone and there's a picture of me with my top off in the Ballarat bar, surrounded by glamorous women. Right. And he said, "You're fucking lucky." And the headline said, Irish player lets team down off the pitch. I was like, oh God, what am I going to do? But what the English media had done was they put this picture out thinking that we were going to get beaten by Australia to take the pressure off them. Thank fuck we won. But several hours later, my mum rings me. And she said, "All right, son." I says, "All right." She says, "Well done. You should have been man of the match. That old Donal Lennon never gives it to you." I was like, "Oh, I know. She says, You're brilliant. I says, "Right." She says, "I just nipped down to the shop there and grabbed myself a copy of the Belfast Telegraph."
Oh, Jesus.
I says, "Right. Fuck's sake." She says, "It's not good." I said, "What's wrong?" She says, "Well, you're standing on the front page with your belly hanging out, right? You look like you've been dragged through a bush sideways. What the hell's going on? You've got alcohol in your hands, everything else. I was like, oh, God, no, no. I'm sorry, right? Pull your socks up, get yourself together. Well done on tonight. I said, by the way, the Daily Mail back in the UK tried to ruin me. What's the headline saying? It says, no, no, it's all right. It says, Ulster legend leads team to victory.
We do have a special surprise for you this evening, Stephen. Your old friend, Will Genia, has dropped us a quick message.
Stephen Ferris, you know what? I just want to say thanks. You're the reason that I'm somewhat known as a rugby player, not because of the fact that I was maybe like half decent, but more so because from the 2011 Rugby World Cup, as many people put it to me, you picked me up like a little kid and dragged me back. I feel like it was maybe 5 meters, but it's been told to me that I was dragged back like half the field, so I
Have you met him much since then?
Have I met him since?
Yeah.
No, I haven't, but I've had a number of engagements on social media with him, and yeah, he was really signed. He keeps himself in unbelievable nick. He's out in Japan, I think, still coaching at the minute, maybe, just only finished playing. So, yeah, and yeah, a lot of people say, oh, I love when you took George Gregan up the field. I'm like, no, mate, wrong era.
Andrew, for you on 2011, it's interesting that Brian kind of goes straight into the regret piece after that. Is that the same for you when you think about that World Cup?
Yeah, just whenever you think about the opportunity that we had and the reaction to 07, you know, everything that we did in 07, we just did the complete opposite in 11. We changed venues every few days. We had fun. We enjoyed ourselves. We performed well. We trained well. We were well prepared, but we made sure we did everything. We had fun out there and we had a great old tour. Queenstown was amazing. And it went under the radar because of everything that was happening with the English lads. Stevie mentioned Paul McNaughton. I got in trouble with Paul McNaughton a couple of times. When Draco arrived in Queenstown, he made a speech to the local, the Maori population. And he said, it's brilliant to be here in Queensland. I mean Queenstown. And he said, sorry, Freudian slip. And we all went, that's not a Freudian slip. So then we had this whole piece on the bus around, New Zealanders are so stupid, if you say something bad, just say it was a Freudian slip and they'll fall for it. But then the bus driver, Kiwi lad, Paul McNaughton, was kind of offended or worried that, you know, there'd be some bad press get out there. So after a couple of episodes of this, he sat me down on the outside the team room and give me like an old school telling off, and he said, Andrew, are you stupid? I was like, this is obviously rhetorical. But he wanted an answer. So, and this is like, if you imagine this, all of the lads are in the team room behind looking out the window and pulling faces and doing this and all. And Nodder says, are you stupid? And I had to say, I didn't know what the right answer was. No, I don't think I'm stupid. Is that the right answer? And I got told off by him. But it was all kind of part of the crack we had on that. Like, it felt like a tour, but it was a World Cup. It was just so unique. I was on the bench for most of the games. Didn't get a whole lot of game time. I played loads of golf. Came back home with golfer's elbow. But being a part of it, and I suppose even now, you know, it took 23. The opportunity we had in 23 was incredible, and for that to be gone as well. And then you just look back, and the opportunity there. When's the next time this Ireland and Ireland side is going to have an opportunity to create that sort of history? But yeah, it was a great tour.
If there was one game in my career that I wanted to play again, it was against Wales in the quarterfinal. Any other game, I didn't care about. I don't care about losing or losing badly, like the Champions Cup final against Leinster, where they blew us apart. Like, I don't. Part of me is like, okay, if we played that game again, we'd probably get beaten again. It's okay, but that game, we're just scratching our heads afterwards, going, you know, what went wrong? But I think you just got to give the credit, the Wales on the day, and they were just the slightly better team than we were.
I'd like to play Leinster again, though, to be fair.
We'd like to play you again.
For you and your relationship with that string of head coaches, I heard you on the High Performance podcast actually during COVID with Jake Humphrey saying that you saw Simon Zebo do the back heel. Mm-hmm. And you thought to yourself, geez, I'll never be able to do that on a test level pitch. But that when Joe Schmidt comes in as Ireland head coach, he sort of empowered you in terms of what you could do on the rugby fields. So is it fair to say that Schmidt was the greatest key you had to caps and to success in the Ireland jersey?
Yeah, I think so. Schmidt came in and he kind of simplified things a little bit, and my career had kind of been up and down a little bit, and then whenever Schmidt came in, he just simplified, here's what I want you to do. And it was, you know, carry hard, chase the ball, you know, make good decisions, hit hard, you know, just kind of real basic stuff. And if you can contribute that to our team performance as a winger, everybody else is going to do their job. And that was Schmidt's philosophy. And you know, I always slag Zebo that, you know, he was too talented for Schmidt. And I was just about the right level of talent for Schmidt. You know, I just knew if I was able to work hard and deliver in those things, then, you know, I could get the best out of myself. And Schmidt was able to do that, tap into that. And I'm always very thankful that I had that period at the end of my career where I was able to enjoy some success. Because if you get to the end of your career, if it's cut short through injury, and you feel like you don't fulfill potential, you know, there's a lot of unfinished business, I would imagine. So for me, getting that, those 2 or 3 years, you know, with Schmidt, 2014, 2016 on tour, beating South Africa the first time, 2016 in Chicago against the All Blacks, you know, I've got amazing memories, and just have got a little bit of joy with under the Schmidt regime. It was, it's nice to be involved in that and have those memories.
Yeah, there's probably a whole pile of truth in what he's saying there about the level of talent that Joe Schmidt likes to work with, Brian.
I don't know, that feels like a prompt that's going over my head, but Joe was amazing for us, he really was, and like the, you know, one of the first training sessions when he came into Leinster, you know, someone threw a pass down at my ankles and I went to catch it and I knocked it on, and like usually you'd be like, okay, well, and Joe just stopped everyone and he just looked at me and said, Draco, good players take them. And everyone went, ooh. And it was a real tone setter for having no hierarchy. I spent the 4 years, three at Leinster and one with Ireland, trying to see whether he rated me or not. I was like, it was one of those coaches that there was so much uncertainty the whole time. He'd bring you in and then just push you away ever so slightly. It just, you were constantly, it was like a parent's trust that you were trying to get, you know? And I still amn't entirely sure. And it's copper fastened, because when I decided in 2014 to retire, I kind of said it to Joe and he was like, all right, mate, best of luck with that. And I thought, geez, he could have thrown me a bone a little bit. Gone, oh, give me an old token. Oh, no, would you not think about trying to get to the next World Cup? He's like, all right, see you, best of luck in retirement. So, but he was so demanding, and it's very, very fulfilling in the winter of your career to get some of your best coaching, to have that where because you need an energy to stay in there, because there's a disconnect with you and all the younger players when they're 15 years older, and Snapchat was a thing that kind of was the beginning of the end for me. They were like, have you got Snapchat? I was like, no, I'm not, and I'm not getting Snapchat. Weirdly, I have Snapchat now, but that's because my daughter has it and I just want to keep an eye on her. But I remember that I was like, no, this is a different world. And it was lovely to get really great coaching, and where he'd come up with a play and he'd pull the team together, and then you'd run the play and he'd carve them open at training, and you just was like, wow, where has this been? And that's not to discredit any of the other coaches, but it was, from a technicality point of view, it was on a different level that many of us hadn't tasted before. And I think if you look subsequently at the coaches that have come into Ireland with Stuart Lancaster and Andy Farrell since then, they've kind of seemed to elevate it and bring it on to the next level. But that he was very much an outlier at that point.
Yeah, we will come into that quite a bit in the second half of tonight. Just as a final point on this, there is a bit of symmetry in terms of both of your careers, Stephen and Brian. You retire at the very same time, obviously quite different ages. Stephen, can I ask you, do you remember much about the Brian O'Driscoll retirement tour? Because obviously it was happening parallel to yours.
The tour. The last game, there was like a blimp, was there? Like floating around the stadium?
It was a balloon.
A balloon?
Yeah.
No, like I wrecked myself in 2012. So I had a good 2 years to get my head around it. Like, and yeah, I knew it was coming a lot earlier than it sort of did. Where Draco was able to finish probably where he wanted to be. I obviously couldn't do that. But like part of me is like, okay, that's the hand that I was dealt, but I could have went on and played another 20 games for Ireland, 5 games for Ireland. Peter O'Mahony might not ever get playing for Ireland if I had kept playing. Like, I'm joking.
The joking bit won't be put in the show. That'll be so when people are looking back at this, all they'll hear is, I played brilliant here. I was outstanding there. Peter O'Mahony would
have
played.
You know who I sound like? Quinny.
Quinny, oh, Jesus.
I sound like an old Quinny. But no, like...
We know where you're joking.
Part of me is just like, it ended and you got to move on with your life. And straight away, as soon as it ended, I went away traveling, just, you know, did things that I wasn't able to do previously. Got drunk a lot more. And yeah, that's the way it went. But looking on and seeing like Brian with his kids and like Rory Best when he hung the boots up, you know, his kids and everybody coming on, getting those photos. And I'm sure they're one or two around the house or whatever, brings back really good memories. But I had my fill. Like I really did have my fill, and I don't look back with any regret, to be honest.